you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Today we launch The Romano-Saxon War by Josh Hutchins. Josh wrote this epic multi-part story a couple years ago. He's since expanded it into a book by the same name, The Romano-Saxon War, which is our very first Twilight Histories book, and it's available for sale on the website at twilighthistories.com. This recording is the rough sketch for that book. It is the original spark. It's something that started off small and kept expanding. The world and the story kept growing and growing. When the show's finally wrapped up, the real work began as Josh compiled and rewrote and painstakingly edited the Romano-Saxon War into a book. I am personally blown away by Josh's bulldog determination to see this project through. It is a huge feat to get a book written, and we're all immensely proud to have the Romano-Saxon War hold the Twilight History's name. And now, please turn off the lights, close your eyes, and listen to The Romano-Saxon War, Part 1, by Josh Hutchins.
Look at you. Very rugged. The long beard makes you look intimidating. Thank you, I guess. Where are you sending me this time? I tighten my jaw and tilt my head to the side, smiling at the woman. She turns to look at her computer display. How about somewhere in the ancient Roman Empire? I shrug and blow air out of my cheeks. I don't know. I think the Roman Empire is a bit overdone. I mean, how much more can someone really experience the Romans, right? She looks at me with a sinister and knowing sort of grin, and I'm suddenly aware of how hot the room is. Well, what do you know about Britannia? I know little. I mean, you're talking about Britain, right? She bumps her slim black eyebrows up. Britannia is what the Romans called Britain, yes. But what do you know about how the Roman Empire abandoned Britannia in the early 5th century? Clearly, I know less than you're about to tell me, so just cut to the chase, will you? Very well. When Theodosius died in 395 AD, his 10-year-old son, Honorius, succeeded him as Western Roman Emperor. The real power behind the throne, however, was Stilicho, Honorius' father-in-law. When Honorius took the throne, barbarians had been conducting raids deep into Britannia. In 397, Stilicho ordered a naval campaign against the Picts, intending to end their seaborne raids on the east coast of Britannia. He may have also ordered campaigns against the Scotti and the Saxons at the same time, but either way, this would be the last Roman campaign in Britannia, of which there is any record. And we haven't sent anyone there to investigate that thoroughly yet. In the year 401, Stilicho faced wars with the Visigothic king Alaric and the Ostrogothic king Radagasius. Needing soldiers, he stripped Hadrian's Wall of troops for the last time, but the Picts, Saxons, and the Scotti continued their raids. On the last day of December in 406, the Vandals crossed the Rhine and devastated Roman territory, and the Romans did nothing. Nothing good, anyway. What Roman military that was left at Britannia feared that a Germanic crossing of the channel was next. So they dispensed with imperial authority. They chose the soldier Constantine III as their new leader. She pauses to look at me. It seems like she's looking for a reaction, to see if I'm interested. I've always had a deep fascination with Rome, especially with the end of the western portion of the empire. I used to think only lawless savagery followed the fall, though. I'm listening, I say. In 407, Constantine took the remaining troops from Britannia, led them across the channel into Gaul, rallied support, and attempted to set himself up as Western Roman Emperor. Honorius's loyalist forces south of the Alps were preoccupied with fending off the Visigoths, and were unable to put down the rebellion swiftly. Giving Constantine the opportunity to extend his new empire into Spain. I interject. Afterwards, Constantine's empire fell apart, right? He had legions stuck in Spain, and the troops he had in Gaul turned on him, yeah? She nods slowly. Then the Germans basically turned on him, too. Britannia was without any troops for protection. With that, the Romano-Britons expelled his magistrates, Constantine's that is, around 409 or 410, and sent a letter to the young Emperor Honorius. She gives me a curious look. So, you do know something about this? I've been reading. Twilight history thing has fired my desire for learning, that's all. I spent some time in a holographic library in Little Rock, reading the classics, you know, Tacitus, Livy, Herodotus, Oman, a little Sun Tzu. I even read about Caesar's conquest of Gaul. Then I trained in Poland with the... I shake my head. Well, suffice it to say, I've been doing my homework. I just want to be prepared for anything. She gives me an approving smile. Poland. You know, the Bronislaw Academy of Primitive Weaponry is in Poland. I give a sly look. You don't say. She shakes her head and sighs, then points to a wall full of clothing and other props. Please choose from this clothing. You'll be working in a blacksmith shop, so pick accordingly. We're sending you to Londinium, part of the Roman Empire, in the early 5th century. This timeline seems to be identical to our own, but with some extra recorded raids by the Saxons and the Jutes. We aren't sure how that will affect your stay, but please keep a lookout. We don't want any mishaps, do we? I frown at her, and she looks me over, very slowly, and nods. Yes, a wool tunic, leather apron, and the beard. You look the part. That vacant expression on your face makes it look even more convincing. I cock my head to the side. Grinning, she says, you seem to be ready. We've placed you with a blacksmith named Orestes. He's a small old man, but stouter than he looks. This is a turbulent period of history, so be careful and enjoy your journey. Sweat pours off the tip of my nose, like a river meeting a cliff. Steam and smoke combine in the air and billow all around me, making my eyes water. The bellows continues its rhythmic hiss as I reach into the coals with a pair of rough iron tongs. Orestes releases the rope to the bellows and grabs his hammer.
"Lay it on the anvil quick, boy," he says, in a voice as firm as his legs are wobbly.
I'm barely ready before he begins beating at the orange-hot iron. His ancient and spotted skin strains to cover the knotted muscles of his arms. Each impact of his hammer jars my senses. I feel like I'm slowly succumbing to shell shock. I stare at the metal, slowly changing shape with each stroke. I imagine the iron molecules themselves, the heat, the fire, the smell of smoke and burning. I picture the final shape at the end of the fire now, boy! Oh, I'm sorry. I lift the metal blob and move it back to the fire. He lays his hammer next to the anvil and ambles back to the bellows, mumbling. "You know, Orestes, have you considered letting me use the bellows and you hold the iron? I'm much, you know, younger and stronger than you." I try to smile at him.
"Aye, it's true. You are younger than me. And your muscles are bigger. But you're no stronger, boy."
He begins pulling the rope.
"Besides, you never asked if I wanted to make the metal faster, did you?"
No, I didn't. I sigh. The metal glows bright, and I move it to the anvil again. Orestes beats it with several strokes until it begins to cool. When I place it back in the fire, he grabs the rope bellows.
"Listen here, boy. Do you know how old I am?"
I open my mouth to speak.
"No, you don't know. 80. 80 winters, boy. And for 75 of them winters, I've been making the metal. Firing it. Heating it to a sweet orange glow. Hammering. Beating. Shaping. Molding. Making the axes and the tools. The cauldrons and the chains. The swords and the spears. It all takes time, boy."
He wipes his brow with his sleeve. His hand shakes vigorously as he does.
"The man before you said you're a hard worker, and aye, it's true, you are that. But you won't stop with your muttering. Make the metal faster. Make the metal better. Make more of it. Enough. No more, you silly words."
He glares at me. His sharp nose and the bulging veins in the side of his bald head reinforce his annoyance. But his soft brown eyes say otherwise. I take the metal back to the anvil, and he again resumes his hammer. The metal begins taking shape. "What are we making?"
"It's a tool. A tool to connect an ox to a plow."
His swing is steady and strong, but when he rests his hammer on the rudimentary metal tool, his hands tremble.
"Listen here, boy."
He breathes heavily. His pale brown shirt clings to the sweat on his body, and he slaps his blackened hands together.
"You've been here for a while now, and I need to say something about you. People like you are not meant for making the metal. People like you are meant for war. You got no patience, boy. You don't want things tomorrow, you want them now. You don't want to make things, you want to take things. Them's the words of war. Now, you are strong, you spoke true, and you be good with a hammer. But I seen the way you move. Your hands aren't meant for a hammer, no. Your hands are meant for a sword."
"Look at me like a crazy old fool. You think I never held a sword before? I held a sword before. I killed 17 men when the pigs came over Hadrian's wall. I know how to handle a sword. And I know what a man looks like when he's meant for a sword."
He waves his hands in a dismissive gesture.
"I could finish the rest on my own today, boy. Go on."
"Go? Go where?"
"Go conquer the world. Go to the tavern, have an ale. Go meet a pretty girl. I don't bloody care."
I start to leave, and he places a hand on my chest. He's remarkably immovable.
Just be back in the morning and don't be drunk.
I smile at him. Thank you, Orestes. You know, I am only staying here a little while, though. A few months and...
I just so. All the more reason you should spend some time looking at something besides my hammer.
He gestures with his head, and I nod vigorously, remove my apron, and step out from the thatched awning of Orestes' shop. I furrow my brow and take in a deep breath. As I walk, the odor of metal and smoke begins to fade as the smell of grass takes their place. Londinium is a confused jumble of structures. Yeah, it has that Roman look. Lots of stone buildings, bathhouse, wide cobblestone streets. But these Romano Brits seem to have plugged wooden houses into every available gap. I stroll through the heart of the town, with its large square about an acre, and a raised platform at its center. People hurry by with their wares and items to sell. Some have large baskets of goods. Others use hand carts or donkeys to pull small wagons. The central platform is empty, but around it the town is bustling with life. It's a vibrant market. A Britannic bazaar. There's wool and silk in every color. Every color but purple, along with fish, duck, lamb, apples, hides, sheaves of wheat, grapes, wines, ales, jewelry, leather goods. You name it, this market's probably got it. Along with the goods, there's a dull roar and a hum of talking, and the smell of spices. Probably being used to mask the stench of feces. That smell has just been all too prevalent in my Twilight History's world splitting. But looking more closely, I don't see many people actually buying things. The few that do seem to be exchanging one thing for another, not using coins. I look at the sun. Its rays feel good on my skin. Damn Island had been rained on continuously since I'd arrived. I look towards the river. Its waves and ripples sparkle in the sunshine. But it too is masking a stench. Most of the city's sewer drains into the Thames. Several dozen ships are making their way to the docks now. I consider going to a wharfside tavern, but I decide against it. Everything seemed to stink even worse down there. Best to stay here, near the market, to find a drink. After working my way in and around the market booths, I find a small tavern on a side street. Inside the dark room, a fat bearded man with a gnarly scar on his cheek pours me an ale, and I drop a copper piece in his chubby palm. He looks at it closely, and gives me a probing look. I find a seat near the front, where I can see part of the market through the louvered shades. Man, this is good beer. I exhale heavily, just as I see movement in the corner of my eye, as a slight figure sits at my small table. She moves like a shadow. Okay, don't blow this. Wow, she is so hot. Don't say it, stupid. Just don't say that. Say something nice. Be cool. Just be cool. Hi. I managed to get the word out without my voice cracking. Hello. Whoa, that is the sexiest, silkiest, and smoothest voice I've ever heard. I'm already in love. I clear my throat. What's your name? She smiles and looks at the back of her hand before tilting her head gently and biting her bottom lip. Her deep blue eyes hold an ocean behind them, and her plump breasts are just begging to be released from their bonds. I feel my breath quicken. My name is Hecate. I like Hecate. It's beautiful, just like you. A way to go, moron. Where did you find that line? Charlie Brown? Harry Potter? Her sheer gown is sky blue, and it's gathered at her hips with a narrow golden belt. Her long brown hair is tightly braided, but it drapes loosely over her shoulder. And you are Orestes' apprentice. I try to keep from frowning. Yes, I am. A bit old for an apprentice, aren't you? I frown more. Well, I'm just passing through town. I've only been here a few months, and I did lots of things before I became his apprentice. She raises an eyebrow and smiles wide enough to disclose her perfectly white teeth. She moves next to me, places her hands on my arms, and squeezes. You look very strong and healthy. And your eyes, I can tell by your eyes that you are very brave. Before I can even reply, she takes my hand and slides it up her dress against her naked skin. Then she leans in close to my ear. I have a place nearby where I can suck your tongue. Then you can use your apprentice hammer on the anvil between my thighs. She then bites my ear and tugs on it. As she leans back, she gives me a feral look, as if she were a tiger, and I was her prey, some sort of wounded animal. It's like someone was dragging an electrified cable up my spine. I'm paralyzed with excitement. I still have my hand between her legs when a distant voice begins to register in my brain. It quickly grows louder. A moment later, Hecate forcefully pushes my hand away. A boy bursts into the tavern and shouts, "A messenger from Rome's arrived, gonna read his message to all the city."
"Where's he gonna read it, boy?"
the tavern keeper asks.
"In the center of the market, you old fool," the boy shouts.
"Fool!"
The boy barely closes the door before the man throws a rotten turnip at him. It hits the wood with a thud. When I turn back to Hecate, she's gone. I spy her a moment later, exiting a back door. She turns to give me a devious smile, then pulls up a blue hood and steps outside. I leap to my feet and race to the door, bursting through the opening. It's an alley of sorts. The smell of vomit and excrement is palpable, and my eyes instantly begin to water. Snapping my head to and fro, I see a blue wisp of a figure rounding the corner at one end. "Wait!" I chase after. The alley empties into the market square, which seems awash in people wearing blue. The mob of people seems to have increased since I looked at it last. One person in blue turns to look my way. I walk briskly, trying not to garner any attention, and follow her to another alley. I keep after her, one alley after another, until the alleys get noticeably nicer and better smelling. I catch up to her when she's pulling the handle to a back door into a very large building. "Hey, why are you running from me?" She turns to give me a look, both furious and desperate. "Where are you going?"
I have to get back before,
she says in a panicking sort of whisper. "We were just getting to know each other back there in the tavern. Did I do something wrong?" She snaps a glare at me.
"Look, I think you're cute. I just...
The door finally opens, and she steps inside. Before she can close it, I put my foot in the gap. She presses her face close to the door and looks at me.
"I'm sorry, I just... can't be seen outside this house. Please don't tell anyone.
Why?
She tries to shut the door, but I won't pull my foot out of the gap.
Hecate, if that's really your name, why did you come on so strong if you didn't want to... You know, I get the sense you don't actually do this for money.
Look, if you want to see me again, meet me in the alley behind the tavern tomorrow.
For sex?
Her eyes flash open. For whatever you want. Now go.
She pushes me away with a surprisingly strong arm, then snaps the door shut. I hear it latch an instant afterward. Tomorrow, it's a date. I walk back to the market with a little swagger.
Wow, there are a lot of people here. I guess I didn't think there would be this many people interested in a message from Rome. I was wrong. We're all densely packed into the square. On the stage, a man in a red and white travel cloak takes a scroll from a leather satchel at his side and unrolls it. Next to him are two large men. One wears banded armor with a gray helmet covering a portion of his face. The dark eye holes challenge anyone to make a wrong move. Under his armor, he wears a dark green tunic with breeches. The other man is in ringmail with blue clothing. And their swords, they're not what I was expecting. I guess I had that classical image of a Roman legionnaire in my head. These guys have swords much longer than the Roman gladius. Behind the messenger stands another man. He's so thin he looks gaunt. His paper white skin makes him look even more sickly. He gives the messenger an approving nod, then steps back. The messenger holds the scroll up, and a hush descends on the assembled crowd.
This message is from Emperor Honorius himself. Citizens of Britannia, I have received your request for aid in repelling Saxon and Pictish raiders. Was it not just last season that I sent Stilicho to rid your coast of these barbarians? Have you taken leave of your duties in failing to maintain your coastal defenses? Are your needs in the frozen north greater than the needs of Rome herself? Rome is beset on all sides by Germanic foes, not just along your shores. My legions are needed here. I will see to the military needs of the Empire, whilst you must see to your own defenses. I, Honorius, am no longer your emperor.
He nods, obviously satisfied with himself.
We're citizens of Rome, someone shouts.
Will Rome bring back the legions after they've defeated Germania?
The messenger tightens his lips. The man in black steps forward, his arms raised in the air with his palms open to the crowd.
Romans, Romans, please be at peace. The emperor is wise and the empire is large. Once this current crisis is over, He will assuredly bring the legions back here to protect his citizens who live in Britannia. We are not being abandoned.
He can't do that,
another person shouts.
What about the Picts and the Jutes?
The man presses his arms down in a calming motion to the crowd. We will do as the Emperor suggests. We will arrange our own defenses until the legions can come back. Stilicho's recent campaign will keep any invaders away for some time. We won't see any Picts or Saxons or any other raiders for years to come.
I want to hear it from the Child Emperor himself.
The messenger is a liar.
Liar! Kill the messenger!
Kill!
A stone, probably no larger than my fist, enters a trajectory, seemingly from nowhere. I feel the group around me holding its breath as my jaw hits the ground, and the stone makes a solid connection with the messenger's skull, who's standing behind the man in black. A splash of blood paints the guards nearby.
No, stop!
The man in black shrieks. It serves only to provoke the crowd in an eruption of noise and flying debris. Stones rain down on the messenger, and people climb onto the stage. The man in black hides behind the two guards, still shouting at the angry mob. The sharp hiss of drawing swords rings loud and clear. It seems to make no difference to the mob, and people begin ripping the injured messenger's clothes and his flesh from his body. All the while, the shouts of "For Rome!" and "Death to traitors of Rome!" I turn and run as the chaos rattles on behind me.
The faint tink, tink of iron hitting iron calls to me long before the blacksmith shop is even in sight. I find Orestes pounding on that same piece of metal. He hears me coming and looks to see me.
Give up on conquering the world, did you? Or just on meeting a pretty girl?
I smile broadly, still breathing heavily from my run here. No, I met a pretty girl, but there was a messenger from Rome. He had some bad news.
Bad news? Like what? Are they calling for more troops?
No.
The price of wine is going up? Price of iron is going down?
No.
Our governor's staying here? Rome has fallen? Dead's rising from the grave? What, boy?
The Empire is abandoning us, Orestes. Britannia is no longer part of the Empire. He said we had to defend ourselves from now on.
Who said?
The Emperor, Honorius. Orestes turns to look into the nearby trees, unblinking, with his mouth slightly open.
I always wondered if I'd ever hear that during my lifetime.
He exhales and turns back to me.
Rome's been on this island for hundreds of years, and Rome was around for hundreds of years before then. Had to end sometime.
I don't think the Empire's ending,
They're just letting us go.
Letting Britannia slip through their fingers, eh? It's funny how we've already started referring to Romans as them.
He shrugs.
Once they pull back from one territory, they'll pull back from others. This is how it all ends, boy. All the fighting amongst ourselves, that didn't help much either.
He turns back to his hammering. The metal has cooled to a pale yellow, so he sets it carefully back into the coals of the furnace and begins pulling on the bellows, causing the fire to spit and spark. So what does that mean to us?
It means nothing to me. I'm too old to defend the Empire anyway, not even this little island.
I walk to the fire and hold the tongs as he continues to pull on the bellows. Well, what does it mean to me? I'm young enough to be sent off to war. Anyone that comes here will probably kill me because I'm, you know, young and healthy.
And strong too, right? Look how big your muscles are.
I'm being serious, Orestes.
Are you asking me what you should be afraid of?
I shrug and adjust the metal in the furnace. That's a weird way to put it, but I guess that's what I'm asking. Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you, boy. I don't know who we should fear. People's like animals. They'll be afraid of anything and everything. The Picts, the Saxons, Romans, the Irish. They'll be afraid of not knowing what to fear. They'll start fearing each other. That's when things get interesting. When an entire people tears themselves apart. But you should fear nothing, boy. Least of all the Picts. I killed 17 when it...
Yeah, I know, Aristus. When they came over Hadrian's Wall. He lets go of the bellows and moves to the anvil. I follow suit, squeeze the tongs, and move the metal to the anvil as well. He begins hammering.
I tell you who's pissing their britches right now, boy, and that's our noble governor. The last thing he wanted to hear was that news from the emperor today.
I crease my forehead. Thorium?
Yes.
He wipes his brow. He sets his hammer down, and I begin to move the metal back to the fire, but he stops me.
We're done for today, boy.
He nods at the metal tool I'm holding.
It's ready. Go dunk it in the water pail, then let it finish cooling next to the fire, but not in it.
When that's done, we walk into Orestes' home, which is attached to the awning of his shop. We take two steps inside, and he puts his arm out in front of me. The room is dim and damp. I figure he's about to make some joke about gathering firewood, but I watch him silently draw a short blade from his belt. He moves quietly across the room in a flash. I move to join him, whatever it is, when I see a dark figure emerge from a corner. Orestes leaps at it. He pushes the figure to the dirt floor and holds the knife to their throat.
Aha! You think you'd be an easy target for a thievery, did you?
I'm not here to rob you.
Orestes rolls the man onto his back with little difficulty and pushes the point against the man's chin.
Right. I won't be believing that lie. You must think me a real fool.
Please. I won't try anything. I just need a place to stay for a day or so until this crowd dies down.
Orestes lets go of the man and stands. The man slowly gets to his knees, then rises to his feet. He's well over 6 feet tall, with wide, muscular shoulders, and he's wearing a large, green traveling cloak. You're one of the guards, aren't you? The guards who are with the Roman messenger today. He nods carefully.
Yes. So you can probably guess why I want to stay out of sight for a while.
Craven, eh?
Orestes snaps.
I'm not craven, nor am I stupid. What's the point of cutting my way through an unarmed crowd, just so I can reach the safety of Thorium's estate? The people in Londonium are incensed, wild, and out for blood. They took the news from Rome very badly. I think they're afraid. I mean, I'm a soldier of Rome, and they attacked me too. Don't they know I would die to protect them?
Orestes looks at me.
I told you about how fear affects your people, didn't I?
He turns to the man.
What's your name, soldier?
Praxos.
Well, Praxos, I am Orestes, and this is my apprentice.
He gestures towards me. Praxos squints.
You look a bit old to be an apprentice.
And you look a bit in need of help to be casting insults. He looks at the floor and bites his lip. Besides, I haven't always been a blacksmith apprentice, you know. How did you get here? I figured the crowd tore everything apart.
Chiron and I tried to protect the governor, but he ran down an alley and we followed him, and the crowd followed us. When we got to the back door of his estate, he slipped inside and shut us out, so we were standing there looking stupid when several dozen people tore down the street towards us. So several of them know my face. They know what it looks like while I'm killing people too.
I frown as he continues.
Look, it's not just the mob out there. I get a strong sense Governor Thorium locked us out on purpose.
Took you all day to figure that out, huh?
Where are you from?
Rome.
No, I mean before that. He raises an eyebrow.
Camilla Dunham. And you?
I smile. You've never heard of it. I can promise you that. I step closer to him and put out my hand. He looks at it for a moment, then reaches out and grasps it.
I like you already,
Praxos says. He turns to Orestes.
May I stay here for a while, just until the trouble passes over? I won't be a burden. I have silver and copper coins.
Orestes waves a hand.
Keep your coins. You'll be needing them for the tavern and for the brothel. There's a change of clothes around here somewhere, and you can help make the battle, as long as you aren't worried about being seen.
I am deeply in your debt.
Orestes lets out a large breath.
Looks like I'd be having two worthless apprentices now.
A thin and pale man with red hair places two earthen cups on the table between Praxos and myself.
To Rome,
he says, holding his cup in the air.
Be quiet with that, will you?
Praxos looks around sheepishly. I mean, I know you're not a coward or anything, but don't be stupid.
My apologies. To Orestes,
he says, slightly quieter. How about to ale and women? He grins.
I'll drink to that.
We both sit back and take a long drink. The market seems slightly less vibrant than it did all those weeks ago when your friend read that stupid letter from Honorius. Fewer merchants, little less color, less noise. Somehow it seems less alive. You notice that?
I guess I haven't been paying attention like that.
Praxos rubs his shoulder and winces.
How is it that Orestes, a man who must be 2 centuries old, is able to work me until I hurt? Do your arms hurt too?
No, they stopped hurting a long time ago. And now they skip pain and go straight to numb.
Indeed.
So, it's been a week now. When do you plan to go back to Thorim's estate? He lifts an eyebrow in his drink.
Tired of me already?
No, but don't you have to report or something?
For all Thorim knows, I'm dead. I have nobody here to report to other than him. The ship we took to Londonium has surely left by now.
I squint at him. But what about Rome? Don't you have to take a message back there? He shrugs.
I doubt they care either. One legionnaire and a cast-off portion of the Empire.
What about your family? Friends? Aren't there any soldiers expecting you back? He shakes his head with his lips pulled tight. Then why did you come here?
Do you find it queer that I would not return to Rome? Rome is not the center of the world as everyone says it is. I've had my fill of Rome.
So, you took the job of delivering the message from Honorius, knowing you'd never go back to Rome. I see. Well, are you planning to join Thorium's personal guard or something?
No. That imbecile. I'm in no hurry to serve another fool. I heard he executed his own father for treason a few years ago.
I sit up straight. What?
Yeah. I don't know all the details, though. Just something I heard on the way here. The merchant we sailed with didn't tell me more than that. Well, no, he did say that Thorim's grandfather died soon after. Of a broken heart, they say.
Who is they?
You know, they. Rumors.
He takes another drink. Well, I don't know anything about Thorium.
You know where he lives.
I frown. I do?
You told me about chasing some whore through the alley just before the riot. Well, the door you described is the back door to Thorium's estate.
Oh. Oh. That means he and I probably shared the same... Oh.
You know, apprentice.
I have a name, P-Brain. We should use it.
Whatever you say, apprentice. What I was saying was that we could go see the ladies over at the...
That's a bad idea, amigo. I'm telling you, they have diseases over there. Braxos, what is it? I turn to see that he's sitting more erect in his chair, looking unblinking at several dark shapes moving swiftly across the far side of the square.
Riders. In a hurry, too. Only bad news travels that fast.
I point to his cup. Chug that, and let's get the hell out of here. I don't want a repeat of the rescript of Honorius.
Saxons are coming, the Saxons are coming. 10 ships and 1,000 men. The Saxons are coming. Landed the ships near Camulodunum. The Saxons are coming, the Saxons are coming. All citizens to meet in the town square to hear the governor's message. The Saxons... Ow! Ow! Okay. I'm sorry. Yes, okay. No, please, no. I will. Yes, I promise.
Yes.
The door to Erastus's home snaps open, letting in pale light. Just long enough for a small, rickety man to enter.
Damn fool boy! Does he think we're all deaf? Standing outside my home with his... Are my two lovely apprentices finished with their beauty sleep? Or should I fetch another pail of water like last week?
I'm up,
I say, as I throw off my threadbare wool blanket. We both look over to where Praxo sleeps, to see the customary empty bed. He's praying again, I think. Erastus licks his lips in thought and waves a dismissive hand.
No matter. I don't think there's nothing to make today anyway, boy. Let him pray all he likes. Maybe his god will fight the Saxon force.
There's something about fear that makes people find safety in numbers. The town square is impossibly full. Worse yet, the people who now fill it have distant, terrified looks in their eyes. A heavy morning dew has everyone's clothes clinging to their skin, and it releases the smell of mud and rain into the heavy air. That's what I keep telling myself, anyway. All I really smell is Dark Age BO and piss. Why do I always fall for these tricks? Twilight histories, I mutter under my breath. They could have sent me to a tropical beach. Even this world has beaches, surely.
Do you want me to lift you so you can see?
Praxo says to Erastus. He gives Praxos a dark look.
I dare you, boy. You put one of them goat-loving hands on me, and I'll rip your arms off and beat you with them.
Praxos holds his hands up in surrender, and we both laugh.
I'm sorry I asked.
Now, shut up so I can hear, boy.
A few minutes later, a gaunt-looking man wearing a black sash stands on the central platform, and a hush covers the masses. He holds up a hand and broadcasts a smug look to everyone who can see him. Praxos leans close to me.
That's Thorium, he says in a low voice.
People of Londinium.
The man in black slowly lowers his hand, clearly for dramatic effect. I shake my head.
We are all citizens of Rome, even though the Emperor has challenged us to defend ourselves. The traitorous messenger of Rome has been executed at your noble hands.
There's an odd sort of cheer from the assembled crowd. They seem more subdued than last time, though. Maybe it's the presence of several armed guards on the platform.
Our Roman and Brythonic blood is strong. We shall defeat any army that comes at us.
There's a pathetic murmuring this time. He looks around some more.
Rioters tell me there is a Saxon raiding party in Camulodunum, just 3 days' march from here.
And you waited until today to tell us?
A path of people between Orestes and Thorium slowly parts.
Ah, Master Erastus. I was told that you died recently, but I see that was untrue. God is just.
He pauses and places his hands together.
That's the thing about receiving news. Sometimes it just isn't true, and sometimes it comes late. I've only just heard of the Saxons in Camulodunum.
Ha! A lie! Every half-wit in town knows riders arrived yesterday afternoon.
Thorium smiles with his mouth, but not with his eyes. Even though he and Erastus
are at least 20 yards apart. The crowd is now quiet enough to hear a mouse fart.
Master Orestes, I know you and my grandfather served Rome well, and now you think you know how to defend this city and the lands around it. I assure you, you don't.
He does a slow turn, showing his face to all the crowd.
I intend to send another messenger to Emperor Honorius. I believe he will send the legions this time. Our situation has changed. He will surely recognize this.
A liar and a fool. Didn't you hear the last message, Thorium? The Emperor wants nothing to do with us.
People are now backing away from Orestes, as if they just learned he was a host for a contagious disease. Everyone exchanges nervous looks.
Again, Master Orestes, please let me handle this.
You? You plan to lead an army to meet the Saxons in the field?
Of course not. I've summoned Maximian from Gleven. I will assemble an army here, and Maximian will lead it. He is the professional soldier, and he will do as I command.
Not enough to be a fool and a liar. Got to be craven as well. Some governor, Thorium. Your grandfather would be proud.
Thorium smiles blithely.
Yes, Master Orestes. Perhaps you'd like to join my grandfather. You and he can discuss my faults all day and night.
As he speaks, a woman in a translucent dress with exotic brown hair walks to the side of Thorium and clutches his arm. She leans her head on his shoulder.
And now you are upsetting my fair wife, Thorium adds.
Praxos and I both turn to look at each other. I mouth the word wife with incredulity written all over my face.
Half the men of town have upset your wife if they have enough coin.
There's an audible gasp from the crowd.
Seize him!
Thorium shouts. And three gruff-looking men begin forcing their way through the people towards Orestes.
You are a fool, a liar, and a coward. And yet we follow you. So who's a bigger fool, huh? You or us?
He waves his hands wildly as he talks.
Kill him! I command it.
The closest man of the three guards lunges at Orestes and throws a punch that would have knocked out a mule. Only Orestes ducks under his swing and grabs a handful of flesh and cloth at his breeches, right where his legs meet.
Ha! You think you'd be taking my life, but I'd be taking your balls.
Orestes yanks, and I can hear the man's skin tearing away from his body. He screams. The next guard draws a short, dark sword and swings it down at Orestes. It meets my blade with a loud clang of iron on iron. He hesitates an instant too long, and I kick him in the center of his chest, hard enough to lay him out cold on his back.
Kill both of them,
Thorium barks. The last of the three comes at me, his sword against my short dagger. He swings and I parry, followed by a meaty punch in his jaw with my left hand. I flourish the small steel blade, then slash at him. He leaps back, allowing me to thrust. I bury the knife in his chest, just below his collarbone. He staggers backward as a widening patch of red appears on his tunic. He drops his sword, pressing both hands hard against his chest. I look up at Thorium.
Do you really plan to kill the best blacksmith in town right when we need him the most? Don't talk to me, apprentice.
He quickly turns his frown into a blithe smile.
people of Londinium, I will pay 100 pieces of silver to whoever brings me that man's head.
He points to Aristus.
And I'll pay 5 silver pieces for that one's head.
He points to me.
Keep your money, craven fool.
Aristus gestures at me.
And leave my apprentice alone.
He starts walking slowly towards the center platform. I move closer to him, but he waves me away.
Stop killing the only men we have to fight dissection with, you damned apprentice boy.
He gets to the base of the platform and turns to look at me.
I'm no good in a fight anymore anyways.
I feel like I can't breathe. The crowd presses in again. They all cheer. They're screaming, "Kill him!" and
"His head!"
and "Traitor!"
Aristus is forced to his knees on the stage. They push his chest onto a block of wood, with his head and neck extending past it.
I will not tolerate insults to my fair wife, my family name, nor will I tolerate traitors among us.
He turns to Aristus, Hecate still clutching at his side.
Anything to say, Master Aristus, before my men cut off your bald head?
Too coward to kill me, huh? Not even now. It ends, Thorium. When I see your grandfather in the next world, we'll both get a good laugh at your expense. He was a great man, and you've surely disappointed him.
He faces the floor of the stage, then turns his head back to Thorium.
And one more thing. Leave my apprentice out of this. He's a good boy, and he's done no wrong here today. You hear that, boy? It's all yours now. The house, for what it's worth. My tools. Even the rafters.
He turns back to the floor.
Now, get on with it and swing that sword like you mean it.
That was part one of the Romano-Saxon War by Josh Hutchins. If you enjoyed this show, consider picking up a copy of the book on Amazon or through the website at twilighthistories.com. It's our first Twilight Histories book, and Josh has put a huge amount of effort into it, expanding the story and making sure it was edited and beta tested. It's a solid, well-crafted book, and if you enjoy listening to it, why not have it on your shelf? When you purchase it, please give it a generous rating on Amazon. This will help the book get picked up by Amazon search engines, so it will be visible to others. You can find the book on Amazon by running a search for Josh Hutchins or Romano-Saxon War, or by going to the website at twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening, and take care.